You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hey guys, ready or not, 2024 is here, and we here at Breaking Points are already thinking of ways we can up our game for this critical election.
We rely on our premium subs to expand coverage, upgrade the studio, add staff, give you guys the best independent coverage that is possible. If you like what we're all about, it just means the absolute world to have your support. But enough with that, let's get to the show.
Would Boeing murder a whistleblower? My name is James Lee, and you're watching Beyond the Headlines on Breaking Points.
This morning, police in Charleston, South Carolina tell NBC News they are aware of the death of a former Boeing employee turned whistleblower.
John Mitchell Barnett, a notable whistleblower known for his substantial safety and quality reports to the Federal Aviation Administration concerning Boeing's production of the 787 Dreamliner, who also appeared in the 2022 Netflix documentary Downfall, The Case Against Boeing, tragically passed away on March 9, 2024. The mainstream media have mostly reported his death as an apparent suicide. Barnett was found dead in his car in the parking lot of his hotel on the final day of depositions in his whistleblower case against Boeing. The curious timing of his death have sparked some suspicions of foul play, and adding to that mystery, reports also indicate that he had previously cautioned a family friend not to accept any official narratives about his death as a suicide.
He wasn't concerned about safety because I asked him, I said, aren't you scared? And he said, and his voice and his, the way he would talk, no, I ain't scared. He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide.
Joining us today is Mo Tachik. She is the investigations editor at the American Prospect, who has done some fantastic reporting on Boeing. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, we're not going to bury the lead today. Did Boeing put out a hit on whistleblower John Barnett? Obviously, everything is still under investigation, but I know in your recent article, you mentioned talking to a few of his old colleagues, also a former Boeing executive. What are their thoughts? Also, at this point, what do we know for sure?
Well, what we know for sure is that John Barnett was found dead in his Dodge Ram, in the parking lot of a hotel where he was staying in Charleston, South Carolina, to give a deposition that had lasted, it was a 3-day deposition. He was on the third day, and he was found dead in his car from an apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound. He was holding a silver pistol. My sense is that the pistol did belong to him, but that hasn't been confirmed one way or the other. And there was something that was in the driver's seat that looked like something like a note. Again, the details on that have not really been released yet. You know, so my first impression was that, this guy must have killed himself, right? I mean, it kind of doesn't, you know, it really, like, I'm always open to the idea that, foul play might be there. I started to change my mind when I think a lot of workers, former Boeing workers in both the factories and in the executive offices, were completely open to the notion that Boeing might have done it. I spoke to one of his former coworkers in particular, who was very terrified. This person did not want to be identified, didn't want, anything that they told me to be, to make them identifiable. But this person told me that, and this person had, blown the whistle at this same Boeing factory and dealt with a lot of fallout as a result of that. And this person told me straight up, if I die, please, there's no way I would ever commit suicide. Like, even if it is a car accident, like, please, like, get it investigated. I mean, that was just not what I expected. I did not expect anybody who worked at Boeing to think that Boeing would do this. There is incredibly bad morale within that company. Everybody who cared about the company for decades, sometimes a half century, the people who have, I've written about Boeing for about 5 years on and off, and most of my sources, worked there for at least 30 years. It was very close to their heart. And that's why, when you talk to the old Boeing heads, they always bring up the McDonnell Douglas merger. This is 26 years ago, but it feels like yesterday to a lot of these folks because that is when everything changed. And learning more about John Barnett, he was at this point in his case where the home stretch was in sight. He was really excited. He was thinking about writing a book. He was thinking about trying to, do some sort of a podcast. He was thinking about, finally enjoying his retirement for once. He was slated to likely, receive a fair bit of money because he'd been kind of pushed out of the company early. He had no real motive to kill himself, especially on day three of a 3 day deposition. On the other hand, of course, again, they did a very good job. Anyone who's seen the Octopus Murders, if somebody assassinated him, they weren't sloppy about it. They really did a very good job at making it look like a potential suicide. Of course, there's a lot that we don't know. We don't know what that note looks like. That's extremely important evidence. We don't know what the wound looks like. All of that has yet to come out.
Yeah, do we
But
have
I spoke.
a, I'm wondering if we have a timeline for the investigation. So you said it was the Charleston Police Department that's involved. Is it just them or are there federal agencies getting in on the action?
No federal agencies as of yet. Again, the law enforcement has been, repeatedly said, hey, it's still under investigation. And everybody who knows anything, like his family and his lawyer, they've been pretty tight-lipped because they don't want to antagonize. The thing that I, that is a little bit troubling, I spoke with a medical examiner in Jacksonville, and he said, like, in suicide, and one thing about suspected suicides is that generally in a lot of bigger areas these days, they don't actually have medical examiners doing those autopsies. Those autopsies are oftentimes performed by coroner assistants. And I spoke to some a criminal profiler from who had been with the FBI for a long time, worked on the Unabomber case, and this guy Jim Fitzgerald told me that it seemed like it was the type of the type of thing that, if you were going to look at it as a potential assassination, the whole aspect, the whole saga made him think that it was like a warning sign, that it wasn't necessarily that they were trying to prevent him from testifying since he had already given 2 days of depositions, but that they were trying to send out a warning to anybody else who might think about, potentially blowing the whistle themselves.
Yeah, I wanted to
I
ask you
was
about
like,
there was one interesting quote that I read in your article. I believe it was an anonymous quote from a former Boeing executive, and you wrote, or
sure.
he said that it's a top secret military contractor. Remember, there are spies everywhere, and more importantly, there is a principle in American law that there's no such thing as an accidental death during the commission of a felony. I was wondering if you could expand on that. What did he mean by this?
So here's the thing, and this is the broader context here. Boeing has been extraordinarily lucky up till now. 346 people, passenger and crew, died on 737 MAX crashes in 2018 and 2019, 4.5 months apart. almost identical crashes. And after the first 189 died on a Lion Air accident, they knew that there was something wrong. Everybody in Boeing knew that this was going to happen again. It was just a matter of when, not if. They should have obviously grounded the plane after the first 189 passengers and crew died. That is obvious. They did not do that. Instead of doing that, they authorized $20 billion in additional share buybacks and introduced a program to eliminate quality control, essentially. So when they talk about the commission of a felony, they're talking about that the murder of those 157 additional passengers. And this is a felony that required a lot of, a pretty vast conspiracy to actually get away with, because Boeing was under criminal investigation after the first MCAS crash in 2018. The criminal investigation widened, understandably, after the second crash. It widened to include the 787 factory. It widened to include an investigation that involved, extensive interviews of John Barnett. And then it narrowed. Then, sometime in 2020, the prosecutors that were handling the case against Boeing got changed, and the case got transferred to Texas from the New York Fraud Department. And Boeing ended up on January 6th, 2021.
Same date.
understandably, this never made any headlines, but on January 6th, 2021, Boeing signed what is known as a deferred prosecution agreement. And the Justice Department essentially agreed to not prosecute Boeing. Because, as it said, the problems that they found in the company were not systemic and they involved very few people. So while Boeing got away with it, with this real, I mean, you can't even call it a slap on the wrist. It's like a wrist massage.
I think
That
you
is
compared
a
that. Yeah, I think you compared that to in one of your articles as like similar to the sweetheart deal that Jeffrey Epstein got in 2007. So I'm wondering how is Boeing able to secure such a deal from the DOJ?
Well, it's not simply similar. It involves a lot of the same people. It involves, very senior partners at the mega law firm Kirkland & Ellis. Crucially, Boeing's chief criminal defense attorney in this case was the deputy attorney general under, I believe it was Mukasey during the Bush administration, who is the highest known official to sign off on Jeffrey Epstein's 2007 non-prosecution agreement. Both of those agreements were very similar in that they required lies, right? The government actually lies, and it's a deferred prosecution agreement on Boeing saying that, there were no systemic problems. Everything that we found, this is a solidly ethical company. Nothing happened. This is just provably false. And similarly with Epstein, I forget what the exact phrasing was, but that agreement actually indemnified all of his conspirators, even those who were not even named. Both agreements drafted by senior partners at Kirkland & Ellis and put together by a lot of, there's a lot of cross-pollination in those two agreements. In fact, the Merrick Garland's DOJ made the case that they aren't actually victims. The four people who died on Ethiopia 301, they were not actually the victims of the crime. The only victim of Boeing's crime is the FAA.
Yeah, it's a lot of disturbing details coming out right now. But before we wrap, I wanted to ask, or I wanted to talk about Boeing's future for a minute, because I think it's important that maybe it's in America's best interest to have a competent commercial airline manufacturer. And we did see some leadership reshuffle after the MAX crashes you were talking about in 2018, 2019. And now we're also seeing another leadership reshuffle with Dave Calhoun. He's stepping down along with some other executives at the end of the year, with some pretty robust exit packages. And then it all depends on, it's like tied to the company's stock price in the coming years. So my question is, can Boeing actually course correct here if stock performance is still the number one incentive that's driving executive compensation?
I don't really understand the stock. I would say no. I would say that Boeing, the stock price, there needs to be some sort of extreme management overhaul. When they did appoint, I mean, it was very obvious. Calhoun was Like it was like when Tim Geithner was nominated for Treasury Secretary, pretty much everyone who knew who Tim Geithner was like, oh God, this is nothing's gonna happen. No one's gonna get in trouble. Citigroup, everybody is just gonna get away with it. And that's what happened. And David Calhoun is a similar figure. He was the lead, director of the board. He was the biggest, I mean, he's a guy who worked at GE and Blackstone. He doesn't actually show up to the office ever. He changed where the office was. He, uses the perch to fly his plane around. I mean, he's a completely worthless piece of shit. I say that without knowing it, but the latest trendy thing to say about Boeing is that what they really need is Larry Culp, the current CEO of GE, a sort of an irony because Boeing's three out of their last four CEOs have come from GE, have been proteges of Jack Welch, and they've absolutely fucked the, Boeing just the same way that Jack Welch ultimately fucked GE by completely financializing it and refusing to grapple with the fact that building something that involves 4 million parts is not the same thing as, like manufacturing light bulbs or post-it notes, which is what, McNerney used to do. So I think that there is a real effort within the sort of, Davos set to say, hey, no, actually the market can take care of this. And if they just hire the right guy, the right MBA, this guy, Larry Culp, who maybe isn't as much of a sociopath, who believe in building companies and putting them on the road to growth and who believe in quality, because it has been such a, total, it's very clear to like everyone in aviation now that Boeing actually can't build a plane, that they have lost the ability to competently build an airplane. And that is like an existential problem. And it's not reflected in the stock price. I think a lot of that stuff is, the product of algorithms this sort of conspiracy of algorithms and fraud.
Yeah, as an MBA myself, I can confirm a lot of sociopathic behavior that I see.
Yeah.
And no, they don't know, they don't think it's that way, but it is from outside looking in, it definitely is. Anyways, this is obviously a developing story, so hope to have you back on. Really quick, anywhere you want to point the audience to if they want to find or if you want them to find more of your work.
If you look at prospect.org and search for Boeing, I think you'll find a lot of my stories. I also write a lot about healthcare and all kinds of things. So anything that involves the intersection of organized crime and finance, I like to sniff around those cases.
Awesome. Well, everybody go follow Mo. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
That is it for me this week. If you're looking for more documentary style deep dives on various topics related to business, politics, and society, you can follow me on my YouTube channel, 5149 with James Lee. The link will be in the description below. As always, keep on tuning into Breaking Points, and thank you for your time today.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Stoller, author of Monopoly Focus Newsletter Big and an antitrust policy analyst. In this big breakdown, I'm going to ask the question, is Live Nation Ticketmaster, the company that controls most of the live entertainment industry, in fact, a criminal conspiracy? You might think that's a bold question, and it is. But some explosive new documents just came to light that suggest that, well, it's a question worth asking. Let's dive in. In 2010, the live entertainment industry was in shock when Live Nation, the nation's leading concert promoter, bought Ticketmaster, which basically had a monopoly over ticketing software and was a major player in artist management. It was a very controversial deal, and Ticketmaster had already bought out most of its other competitors in ticketing software and really upset Pearl Jam in the 1990s and was a well-known, you know, market power problem. But the government's antitrust division under Obama allowed the deal to go forward anyway. In fact, seems like they were sort of proud of doing that. Let's take a look at this public picture that was put on the DOJ's website. So that publicly released photo shows the head of the antitrust division, Christine Varney, her number two, William Cavanaugh, and their advisor, Gene Kimmelman, announcing that they were allowing that merger and talking to reporters about it. Now, the Biden antitrust division is very different than the Obama antitrust division. And they have been investigating Live Nation Ticketmaster, the firm that the Obama administration allowed to form. They've been investigating it for years. And when firms are being investigated, they tend to lawyer up. And so that's what Live Nation did, hiring an old antitrust lawyer named Dan Wall to represent them against potential monopolization charges that could be coming from the antitrust division. Wall defended Live Nation publicly as part of a PR campaign earlier last month in a blog post. He wrote that, you know, you might think that Live Nation charges a lot for tickets, but that's really just supply and demand for a popular artist. The corporation itself charges low prices, not high ones. He even put up a comparison of commissions charged by online marketplaces, from Twitch to Airbnb to Uber, to show how little Live Nation charges. Let's take a look. You see, Live Nation charges less than Twitch, StubHub, Uber, Airbnb, et cetera, et cetera. Concert promotion, Wall wrote, is not a highly profitable business, even for Live Nation, end quote. So look at that commission. It's a measly 7% for Live Nation Ticketmaster. Now, sure, Live Nation charges consumers a lot of money and doesn't pay much to artists. I mean, this was Wall's argument. But they don't, he wrote, set the ticket price. And even worse for Live Nation's shareholders, at least, it's just not a very good business. Wall concluded, quote, the narrative that Ticketmaster fees are responsible for high ticket prices makes no sense. According to Wall, the middleman giant affects at most 2% of the price of a ticket for its trouble. Still, all of that argument from Dan Wall from Live Nation Ticketmaster feels weird. It sounds like it's not true, considering that Live Nation CEO Michael Rapino made $139 million in 2022. That's a lot of money for someone in just such a terrible business. Well, the reason it sounds like it's not true is because, well, it's not true. Or at least it's not true according to new documents released by Congressman Bill Pascrell from litigation in 2019 based on Live Nation's own financial data. These documents are from a court case involving a concert at the New Jersey State Fair in 2011. Now, I just want to tell you where these documents came from because it's kind of funny. We often think about monopolists as sort of dominant and powerful and all-knowing. And that litigation's been going on for 13 years. At a certain point, the plaintiffs hired an expert. His name is Richard Barnett. He's one of the top scholars in the business. And he looked at Live Nation's confidential records, and he wrote about how the corporation actually works. And the plaintiffs then submitted that report to the court. And the judge, unfortunately, ordered it sealed so that no one could read it, saying, it's got confidential information or whatnot. And that should have been that, except, and here's where the stupidity of a monopolist comes in. Live Nation or someone's on Live Nation's legal team or Dan Wall's team or someone like that, they screwed up and they accidentally uploaded the report to a public court site, Pacer, where Pascrell got his hands on it. He just downloaded it. And then he sent it out in a press release and that's how we have the documents. Okay, so what's the case all about that shows how Live Nation really works? Well, it starts with a concert when in 2011, the head of the New Jersey State Fair, his name's Al Dorso, hired a company called Juice Entertainment, run by two experienced concert promoters, to put on a concert. Now, Live Nation, they told Live Nation, do you want to do this? Live Nation wasn't interested. But as soon as they got wind that Juice Entertainment was doing it and started to book acts, Live Nation demanded to co-produce the show. And Dorso, who was running the state fair, was just like, okay, you guys work it out. And he later put it, you know, the Live Nation, they were the 800-pound gorilla. I said, go see if you can work out a deal. That's what he was saying to Juice. Now, Juice and Live Nation couldn't work out a deal, and then Live Nation managed to get Juice fired. How? Well, the smaller firm sued Live Nation, claiming the giant coerced performers into not signing with Juice to appear at the fair and threatened to withhold its ticketing services to the venue, the state-owned Meadowlands Sports Complex, if it were not allowed to be a partner. That's from public reporting. In other words, Live Nation used dominance in other lines of business, artist promotion and ticketing software, to thwart a rival, which is exactly why the Obama staffers like Gene Kimmelman should have blocked the merger in the first place. But this situation leaves a question. Why didn't Juice consent to let Live Nation co-produce the event? I mean, half the profit is still better than no profit, right? Well, the reason is, according to Juice, that Live Nation offered a deal that would have saddled the firm and artists with the costs while Live Nation itself took the profits. In this purported arrangement, Live Nation and Juice would have split the cost of putting on the event, like renting the venue, the soundstage, and so forth. They would have also shared profits from ticket sales with artists and with each other, and that sounds good so far. The problem is what came next. It's in the accounting. Here's the expert report. Live Nation negotiated third-party expenses like rental costs in the venues directly with vendors in exchange for exclusive financial gains not disclosed to their artists or their agents, managers, or independent co-promoters in the form of rebates. So, in other words, Live Nation had secret side deals with vendors to inflate costs by overpaying those vendors and venues, which meant that any profit from the event would evaporate. It would look like a loss. Co-promoters and artists who share in profits would lose out, but and would be told that the show just wasn't profitable. But the thing is, those vendors, those venues who had gotten extra money by being paid inflated costs, would in turn remit that money back to Live Nation in the form of secret rebates. In other words, Juice would pay the inflated costs that would get furtively funneled back to Live Nation, along with all the profits from the show. Now, Live Nation didn't disclose any of this revenue diversion with the artists to whom it had a legal obligation, with whom it had contracts, which is why Juice's lawyer said that the corporation, quote, essentially defrauds everyone involved. Now, these kinds of secret kickbacks ensured what Juice's lawyer called the, quote, financial ruin, end quote, of co-promoters. Now, of course, Live Nation claimed it was losing money or not making very much money on any particular event, and it wasn't. But that's because the profit was coming in through rebates, which, according to this expert Barnett, went on to a line in the accounting statement called, quote, contribution margin, end quote. So Juice's experts found, so interestingly, Barnett even found that Live Nation kept two sets of books. So in one case, they posted an entry of $90,000 rent for settlement, but only $75,000 internally for the same item. They routinely put in profit and loss statements large losses while admitting that events actually made money. So that's just one event, all right? That's one a state fair in New Jersey. How much was this contribution margin across all of Live Nation? I don't precisely know, and you can throw other things into that accounting line, but there are hints of amounts. So in the third quarter of 2021, which is the last time they used the term contribution margin that I can find, it was $747 million, probably in the billions today. And that's where CEO Michael Rapino's nine-figure payday is probably coming from. Live Nation is generating a great deal of revenue, but somehow shows low margins, lots of events where they're not making money, but somehow the cash is coming in. Now, that's just a price hike, right? It's a way of extracting more revenue. But it's also hidden, and hiding the price hikes is important because monopolization, which is about controlling a market and then extracting by your pricing power, is harder to prove if you show low margins, if you show that you're not charging very much. Their antitrust lawyer, Dan Wall, can just write, "Poor little Live Nation, our business is terrible." Yeah, and we all know that you bill by the hour, Dan, on your lovely silk sheets. Now, let's take a step back and recognize what we're really looking at. It's not just an extractive scheme. This is about power. Power over our culture, power over an entire industry. Basically, Live Nation can present venues or other people in the business, anyone in the business pretty much, with a choice. If you cooperate quietly, you'll get extra hidden revenue. And that means cooperating with knowing dishonesty in the business. If not, well, Live Nation will maybe work with your rival or may just buy into the market to compete with you directly, or may not let artists come to your shows. At any point, too, I mean, it's not just the blunt instrument. At any point, Live Nation can dial up or down rebates to reward or punish. And that's increasingly true as Live Nation buys more and more corporations in and around the live event space, with each one presenting additional options for fees and rebates and what is essentially financial engineering. Okay, is this report true? I mean, why, like, you know, Live Nation would say, oh, they got it totally wrong. They didn't disprove it because I don't think they can. But, you know, the question is reasonable. Is the report true? We don't know. The expert is well-respected, and he looked at Live Nation's financial data. And it is easy to believe the worst about Live Nation Ticketmaster. They have a really bad reputation in the industry and then among consumers. But the reason I think it's true, and I'm not sure, but the reason I buy it is because this particular story is consistent with the behavior of a lot of firms, many dominant middlemen firms in our economy, from pharmacy benefit managers to Amazon and their relationship with third-party sellers, how they mediate between third-party sellers and consumers, to big banks who securitized mortgages in the financial crisis, to the advertising technology industry, and so on and so forth. Now, most of them don't use two sets of books. That's kind of like, you know, that's a little bit, you know, above the, I'm not saying everyone's a criminal conspiracy, two sets of books, kind of a red flag. But in general, it's a business model. Middlemen who have market power, they use fees and kickbacks, often hidden through a complex maze of subsidiaries or overlapping lines of business, to extract in ways that are really hard to see. It's inefficient, it's immoral, and more importantly, it creates a climate of fear. The problem is, it's also just the way that we do business today. Fortunately, Live Nation is under investigation, and there are a bunch of companies that are under investigation. But this lesson, if this is true, and I think it is, but if it's true, this is why Live Nation needs to be broken up. And more broadly, why we need to get rid of this way of doing business, these secret kickbacks and rebates throughout the whole economy. Thanks for watching this big breakdown on the Breaking Points channel. If you'd like to know more about how big business and our economy really works, go to the link in the description below and sign up for my Market Power Focused newsletter, Big. Thanks, and have a good one.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.